I have Nguyễn Văn Huỳnh today, kicking off a Vietnamese film festival in Britain. It's called Star Nha Is. I am so excited to talk to you about all things Vietnamese British. We were talking about Thatcher. We were talking about the way your name is pronounced in Vietnamese in Britain, because you were teased so much growing up, and it sounds so traumatic the way, you know, because I asked you what your name, how do you pronounce your name? I know obviously it's spelled Tuyết, but yes. I had a suspicion that, you know, it's not the way that you call it yourself. So let's talk about that.
No, thank you for asking and addressing it, because, you know, for years, I'm like 41 now. And after these 40 years, I've been calling myself Tuệ. And the reason being is because as a child, and being the only Vietnamese kid in school, British people couldn't really get round to saying Tuệ, like with that tongue and that tonality. And the kids would call me Tuệ, Twat, Toilet. And it used to traumatize me. So it just evolved into Tuệ. And it isn't until very recently where I started to do more work with the Vietnamese community, the Vietnamese diaspora, connecting to my roots, that I started to claim my name back. So it's quite nice to hear it, actually. So thank you.
Yeah, we couldn't have it any other way. But I understand it, though. I mean, I get it. You know, I have an American name, Kenneth. And people ask me, my name is actually spelled very similar to yours, except with an N, Duyen. And I'm ashamed of that name. It's a girl's name. And, you know, there's so many things that are loaded with meaning into our names, right?
Yeah. Yep, so much. I feel like this is a whole podcast just dissecting Vietnamese names and the ownership of how we want to be addressed and how we have been addressed. But maybe we'll park that for another episode.
Yeah, there are very few British creatives that I've met in my life. And it just feels like there's not a lot of British, Vietnamese British people. But I think that you touched on something, you know, before we hit record today, is there are a lot of Vietnamese people living in Britain, but I think, tell me about the history. Like, you guys were forcibly dispersed.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I find, like, since I've been curating for this festival, I've been having a lot of connections with people in America. And what they've said to me is like, oh my gosh, you know, the British Viets don't really exist. And I was like, oh my gosh, we do exist. We've been here for like over 50 years, you know, in the late 80s where we came over. Thatcher was in rule. And at that time, there was this policy where they would disperse refugees and migrants because they didn't want to have gang culture. So what happened to the Vietnamese community is that they were dotted all over the UK. So you have some in the Midlands, in the north, in the south coast, sort of London. And as you know, the Vietnamese history is so complex. And, you know, the language boundary, coming to a different country, that sort of trauma of the war, the ethnic cleansing in the late 80s. So coming here and being dispersed, it's taken us 50 years to build communities. And when we say community, that means so many different things in different levels, but there wasn't really an artistic community. And to build a community comes with trust. So I think it's only been the last 5 to 10 years that I've seen artistic Vietnamese communities in Britain emerge.
You know, I think in Europe, there is such an influx of Muslims and people coming from the Middle East. And I think that Thatcher and that administration, through different studies and research, probably saw and understood the gang cultures. It showed up in America. So I don't particularly blame sort of like this sort of, I mean, what do you really know? How sophisticated can a government really be? And they just want to sort of protect their citizens. I'm really just kind of like empathizing with history. But it is really screwed up the way that these communities were not allowed to form. Because I think in some way it happened with the arrival of Vietnamese Americans being split up into four camps all across, because they didn't want the same thing that happened in Miami with the Cuban community. So yeah. I kind of understand it, and you could see it playing all over Europe today with the conservative movements all over the world now are just trying to keep their own people together and not have all these different people quote unquote screw up, and I'm talking on behalf of like my conservative community in Vietnamese American communities. I mean, I understand all of it and empathize with all of it, but I would love to hear your thoughts on that position in Britain.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I kind of echo that understanding, like why it happened. And I think like, it shocked me. I only really discovered it in 2019 that policy existed. And my first reaction was like, it was kind of angry, thinking, why would you do this? But then living in a country and seeing how the world is unfolding in so many different ways, I get it. And I think it's like my sort of outlook in life is that, you know, I don't look at the problems that existed in the past and try to like, you know, campaign against it because it is in the past. So with my work and what I do now, I just try to look at solutions and how to elevate something that should exist and it doesn't. And what different ways can I amplify a community of people who have been, I guess, yeah, dispersed and separated?
The people over at UMSUM Agency, I've had them on the podcast at one point, and they reached out and talked to me about having you or talking about the festival and posting it on our socials. And I was like thinking about that. And I was like, you know, I'm coming here for the film festival because that's my world. But yeah. I knew that when I'm here, there's going to be much more about British Vietnamese culture that I want to explore before we get into the work you do at the film festival. So that's all coming. I want to know about your journey coming up before you started this film festival. Like, what makes you interested in the arts? And are you a creative? Are you like, I know nothing about you and I want the world to know about you.
Oh, thank you. I want the world to know about me too.
Yes. The world deserves to know about you.
The world deserves to know. Tue and Duet, but both identities. Yeah, I feel like my journey has been so long in terms of what Vietnamese means and why I engage with the arts. And to start from the beginning, like, you know, I guess a lot of Asian, East Asian, Southeast Asian culture, like you're not really kind of encouraged to work in the arts. And I know this is something that's like, you know, been said again and again, but that is my experience. And I think for the first 30 years of my life, I kind of delved into more traditional sort of occupations like teaching. And, you know, it was a great job. I got paid well. I got to travel a little bit, but I was bored as hell. And when I was growing up, I had a really strict upbringing compared to my sort of Western sort of counterparts. So I was kind of not trapped, but I was indoors quite a lot. And therefore, my escape was TV. And because I was so addicted to TV, I don't know how this happened, but I was allowed to watch late night TV. And in that, I watched a lot of American horror from the 80s and 90s, Hong Kong horror, where I don't know if Americans have heard of this presenter called Jonathan Ross. So he did this whole midnight series of Hong Kong horror that I kind of engaged with. So it's like midnight movies you watch after midnight. So I was up watching that. Poltergeist, Nightmare on Elm Street. And I think that was just my world. I was just captivated by this surreal world of horror. And then that was kind of a part of me for as young as I can remember. And as I was growing up, film and theater has always been my passion, to the point where I did my work experience in theater for 2 weeks as a stage manager. So yeah, jump forward back to being 30 and thinking, oh, I really hate teaching. I'm going to quit and just go and throw myself in the deep end and pursue a career in the arts. So I kind of applied my skill set, which is really strong admin skills, and went to loads of different arts organizations and finally got a job after 3 months of rejection, got a job at the National Theatre as a PA. And over 4 years, I kind of proved to my superiors that I really wanted to work in events, producing. And I got promoted as assistant producer, digital producer, and then producer. And from there, I was like, wow, this is something I really want to do. But at the National, as much as I love them, I felt like it wasn't really factoring in the community that I wanted to work in. So in 2019, I was approached by this amazing woman called Nguyen Do, who is the only British Vietnamese actor that I've ever seen in my life. And she was on the stage at the National. So I connected with her and she was like, I've got a script. I'd love for you to read it and produce it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've never produced like theatre on my own before outside of an institute. But I read it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is a beast. This is like the first story that I've connected to in the arts. And she asked me to produce it, but I was like, I don't have the experience. I think you should find someone a bit more experienced, but I'll help you write the funding application. So I wrote the funding application. I was like, what am I doing? I need to produce this. This is brilliant. And then so from that, I quit my job, went full time in freelancing for Nguyen to do her play because it was so beautiful. And I decided to do a full-time master's in film programming and curating at the same time because I thought, why not, you know? And I think in the creative industry, to be taken seriously, you need that paper. You need the qualifications and, you know, people take you a little bit more, yeah, seriously. So anyway, so I produced it and it was the kickstart, actually, of my career in producing work that leaned into the Vietnamese community in Britain. And I think as I was producing Summer Rolls, the play is called, I realized that there was a massive, stark absence of British Vietnamese voices. So from there, I kind of focused my career in looking at what was missing and what I love, which is film, theater, and storytelling. And yeah, that's how I got into it.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know, I want to segue real quick, and I don't know if you're doing this in, are you in London?
Yes.
Okay. Here in LA, here in Los Angeles, we have a tradition that several people throughout the history of the Vietnamese film industry here in LA have picked up the mantle, and it's been very organic. It started with Jess Vu. She started a, She started a Facebook page called Viet In Entertainment. And I bring up all this because I want to inspire other Vietnamese people throughout the world because you are doing something. And I just wanted to kind of give the history of like what we do here in LA because there's a lot of us. So Jess Vu started Viet In Entertainment and then she started having these mixers. And then recently another crew of people did the same thing. Din Tai and Wan Yi, both film directors here in LA, started to put together events. And they've done like two or three now, but 200, 250 people show up to these things. And it's just like packed with Vietnamese creatives here in LA. And it's everybody from music to film to, you know, editors to writers. I mean, we actors, we all show up and hang out and it's a blast. And I wonder if that is something that you've done or, you know,
yeah, I mean, I absolutely love that. My heart's beating fast when I hear about that exciting sort of vibe. And I think when you mentioned Jess, she was actually one of the first people I connected back in 2019. And she had this brilliant idea that, oh, we need to connect all the Viets globally and create a directory, which I think we started to do, but she spearheaded it. And yeah, I mean, I feel like in America, in LA, you guys are light years ahead of us. And finding your community, the creative, especially in the film world, is so far more advanced than us in Britain. And I think what I'm trying to do, and I have started small collectives of Vietnamese creatives, and it's just currently a WhatsApp group where we kind of connect, we do monthly meetups, but we're still trying to find our feet. But of course, the ambition is to elevate that into a much larger capacity and hopefully collaborate globally, because I think we all deserve it.
That's awesome. That's awesome here. And we are all here for you all too. And I want to let everybody know we're all, you know, connected through our Vietnamese roots. But let me ask you something. Why is this so important? I mean, obviously, I have my own answer for this question for myself personally, but I like to ask this. Why is it important? Why is it so important that a British Vietnamese woman, Vietnamese British woman like yourself, have to do this community stuff, the entertainment stuff for yourself? Why is it important?
Oh my gosh, that is such a loaded question. I feel like I'm going to answer that in as eloquently and as succinct way as possible because there's so much to unpack. But I think the root of it, and I think this is probably like everyone else, like I think humans in general are storytellers. We connect to stories, and that's the connection we have with each other. And I think, you know, my own personal journey is that I've struggled identifying as a Vietnamese person, and I'm also part Chinese, but I also very much identify as British because I was British born. And the Vietnamese side of me has always been, I guess, suppressed because, again, growing up, people not being able to say my name properly. Also, when you say you're Vietnamese, people are like, what? As, oh, I'm Chinese. Like, oh, you're Chinese. So in some inadvertent way, your Vietnamese side is kind of like pushed to the side. And that's kind of what I grew up in. And I think, you know, a lot of people probably from my generation have questions they want to ask, you know, our elders, like our parents, our grandparents, about their life, their journey. And I think what I've learned is I don't have any right to ask my elders to relive that past. And because of that, it leaves a massive gap for me to try and understand where I come from, you know, that my ancestors, my parents, my grandparents, my aunts and my uncles, brothers and sisters, and their journey. So the only way I was able to connect to these stories was the arts. And I think, you know, we're living in a world where there are a multitude of stories and they're so nuanced that there's no one way or monolith of Vietnamese sort of diaspora storytelling. So I found the importance of, for myself, discovering that through arts, but also making others feel that they can also reach out and connect to these stories. And if they're a creative, that they also can see a platform where they can really express themselves. And I think that is what we've been lacking for so long, is that that mirror to seeing ourselves and being allowed or given that space to say something that means something to us personally or as a collective. So, yeah.
That, I mean, that's basically how I feel about everything, you know. But I return back to the question that I ask myself. Why should Americans or British people give us the space? Why should they afford us the support of you know, I saw the British Council or something like that in support of your film festival. Why do we need to enlist these people to give us a hand?
Well, because we're part of that society. And I feel like, you know, yeah, there's this Vietnamese side, there's a British side, there's an American side, but collectively we all coexist in one place. So when it comes to getting support from public sort of funding boards like the British Council, the BFI, the Arts Council, they are very much engaged in, you know, I hate this word, but I'm going to use it because I can't think of anything else at the moment, but diversifying audiences. And I think, you know, audiences, I think it's the same in LA in terms of cinema. There is a cinema culture and there is so much for people to engage with in terms of stories that is not just based on one side of a coin. And I think specifically the Vietnamese stories, like we in Britain especially, we've only been exposed to the Hollywood canon and the sort of like lens of war through a white male. And I think now's the time where, you know, you're starting to see communities and artistic communities in with Vietnamese heritage in Britain is starting to emerge, is that we're saying, actually, we want to take that space back and we want you to support us because this is something you want to see. And we're not trying to take over a space. We're just trying to expand people's perceptions. And I think when I'm writing, because I do all the fundraising myself, when I'm pitching Star Nha Ease or any other project that is Vietnamese sort of oriented, I generally feel that they do support it because they want that in the sort of cultural discourse.
you have the support of the Vietnamese Film Institute, and I don't know anything about the Vietnamese Film Institute. Can you tell me about the Viet Film Institute in Hanoi?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I have such a history with the Vietnamese Film Institute, and I'd love to tell you more about it. So in 2019, when I did my master's in film programming and curating, my thesis was looking at how to unlock Vietnamese cinema mysteries and bring them to the UK. In that journey, just through Googling, I found the Vietnamese Film Institute based in Hanoi. And I was very bold and directly emailed them and said, look, I'm just this British Vietnamese person who wants to bring Vietnamese films to the UK because it's never been done before. So in some essence, I've blagged my way in there. And, you know, it is a government-owned building. It houses over 88,000 reels of film all through the Vietnamese lens. So you have like tons and tons of like propaganda films, documentaries, films that have been restored, classics. And I was really excited. So I pushed myself into there, and they curated a breadth of films that were made by Vietnamese people. So I was able to sit and watch. It wasn't like, you know, I was entering a cinema. I was just sitting in an office with this hard drive with loads of films I could select. That was already pre-curated for me. And from there, I was like, oh my God, there's something here. There is something really massive here that no one's really getting to encounter. And the more I dug into it, I mean, I could literally talk about this for hours, but there was just stories coming out of this institute that I was so amazed by. But I've just thought I have to bring some of these films to the UK. And, you know, I think the Vietnamese Film Institute, it's a complex building because it's state owned, but I think they want to see international collaboration. So where there's restriction, there's also flexibility in working international relationships.
It's crazy. I didn't even know that it existed. And I feel so guilty for not knowing. And many times, I think of myself as a young person turning 50 here this year, but as a young person, I think that Vietnam is, you know, I'm imagining other people of my generation who doesn't go back to Vietnam often, and we just go back for the food or family, but we don't think that there are things besides food and natural landscapes. Things like the Vietnamese Film Institute, or there's an archaeological institute, Vietnamese Archaeological Institute in Hanoi as well. And these things serve as, I mean, there's an archival place where you can go in and look at old archival footage and things like that, documents. There are all these things that exist in Vietnam and has been there for probably many decades, right?
Yeah.
And
yep.
I'm so glad that you brought that up today. And we might have to dedicate, I know you're busy, you're going into this weekend for your film festival, but we might have to like talk about that and expand that. Because I know that you spent a lot of time in Vietnam and probably poked around the Vietnamese sort of film world in Vietnam.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to talk more about it because I feel Vietnam has... it is bursting for something. Like the art scene is growing. And, you know, part of my research for this festival and for myself is not only going to the archives, but meeting filmmakers, independent filmmakers and actors and producers. And, you know, even like the queer making, like the queer film scene is huge. And I didn't know this. So my first trip, I only was there for a week and I met like so many people who were like engaged in what I was doing, and that kind of birthed this idea. I was like, okay, I'm going to bring everything over, all these films, and then I'm in my second year and I'm just so ecstatic that I can find all these levels of stories that exist in Vietnam that has never ever left Vietnam.
So you started this in 2024, last year,
2019. So
wait, the film festival was started in 2019.
So the conception of the film festival, which wasn't coined as Stania East yet, but it was my thesis for my master's. So the whole thesis was about unlocking Vietnamese cinema mysteries. And that was where my journey began. And it wasn't, you jump forward 2023, where I was contacted by a cinema organization called Live Cinema UK, run by two amazing women. And they came to me because they co-produced a film called Dust and Metal, which is an archival essay film looking at the relationship between bicycles and Vietnam's love for bicycles. So they approached me and said, look, we've got this film. We've shown it in Vietnam. We very much want to show it to British audiences. But we are two white women. We don't connect to the Vietnamese community. How do we do this? And my brain went bing, bing, bing. Okay, I love this idea. I want to watch the film first before I agree to anything. But when I watched it, I was like, this is actually a really poetic film. Even though it's not done by a Vietnamese person, there was a group of Vietnamese creatives that created it. I was like, if we help you, when I say we, there was another curator, an archivist called Cuong Pham. And we said, if we do this, can we do a whole festival and bring my thesis to life? And they said, yes, of course. And that's how it happened. So in 2023, I collaborated with Live Cinema UK to co-produce the first Vietnamese Film Festival.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
In the UK.
So when you say your thesis, what do you mean by that? This is your master thesis project? Like, hey, we can have a film festival in Britain. Is that like, what's the thesis?
That's pretty much it. So my master's was in film programming and curating at Birkbeck. And, you know, as most masters, you have your final project and, you know, it's got to be around curating and programming. And my idea was like, yeah, I'm just going to curate. How do I curate and what does curation mean in this context, taking Vietnamese films and putting it in front of a British audience? So I did a lot of academic sort of research and readings to position this for the later years, which I didn't know it was going to come to life. I obviously in my heart was like, oh, it'd be great if I could do this. And my master's supervisor, when she read it, she was like, you should do a PhD and do this. I was like, I'm a real life producer. I'm just going to do it. So instead of a PhD, I just did it.
You remind me of a dear friend of mine. Shout out to my partner. I have a few partners at East Films. Anderson Lay is deeply, deeply involved in the Hawaii International Film Festival for the last two decades. And he's programmed and he flies to Cannes and Busan and, you know, Sundance. And he's at all the film festivals picking up titles and curating. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we talked about this one time. Anderson's watches probably 700 films a year.
Love him. Love him already.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insane. We'll put you in contact with Anderson Lay one day soon. I think you guys have a lot of overlap. Tell me, when you have an idea for a film festival in Britain, how do you make and manifest it to come to life? Like, what are the things that you have to do?
Oh my gosh, there's a lot of things to do. I mean, the first step always is money. And I think because, you know, obviously the idea already existed. But in order for us to bring something together is finding money that, like, funding boards that will bring it to life. And then venues to support us, because obviously there's a lot of in-kind costs, putting like these films in their buildings and then building a team of people who are just excellent at what they do. For this particular one, I really wanted to have as many Viets in the creative team as possible, which I've accomplished I think, really well this year. But yeah, it's all about money, buildings, and then creative to bring the whole thing together. Yeah.
So money, space, and then people.
There you go. You got it. You can produce the festival now.
Simplified. Yeah. There's the Viet Film Festival here in Little Saigon, ran by Issa Lay, also another Lay, Issa Lay and Anderson Lay. That's been going on since 2004, maybe. She's been at it for over 20 years as well. And that's probably the biggest film festival, I think, in the Vietnamese community worldwide.
I've been wanting to attend, but I've never been able to get a flight to LA to come. But one day I will. Someone out there, please. Please fund me.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you're doing the work that you do. Now, tell me this year about the program.
Well, so this year is, to give it a bit of context, like the first year was introducing like UK audience to Vietnamese cinema. So we curated three war films. From the Vietnamese lens, and then a contemporary documentary and some shorts. This year, when I did my research in Vietnam, I was there for 2 months, which was the best 2 months of my life, bar the pollution. And I kind of wanted to move away from war narratives, and I wanted to know what existed. So I kind of developed some funding to work with Vietnamese curators in Vietnam. And it was actually the Vietnamese curators that I kind of workshopped with that they brought to me the Doi Mai era, which is the renovation period. And I was like, wow, okay, what's this? So we kind of looked at massive film directories from the Institute, and we discovered so many films. I spoke to journalists, film critics about their love for the Doi Mai era, what that meant for cinema. And then someone said instant noodle film. I was like, oh my gosh, what's that? And instant noodle film was like a period from the 1990s to 1994, where there was just like fast-paced, low budget, same actors, same day, pumping out all of these films about love, friendship, and music. And I was like, oh my God, what is this? I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. But I ended up watching loads. I think I watched like about 150 films in 2 months. I was just watching. It was just endless. I was in my Airbnb watching. And I was like, oh, the Doi Mai era. Okay, this is about reimagination, reinvention, joy, rebellion. So from all these films and with the Vietnamese curators, we found some hidden gems that had never been screened before. So we went to the archive, we watched it, and then we kind of curated, you know, all the films that I watched into a watch list of about 30 to 50 films, brought that back to the UK, put a call out for British Vietnamese curators and EC curators who want to curate for a film festival, workshopped with them. And they watched the films, we talked about it, and then developed the program. And it's more than a film festival. It's a cultural event. So we invited Vietnamese musicians, British Vietnamese musicians, poets, illustrators to develop an art exhibition, which reimagines the film posters from the films that we programmed, musicians to respond to the films, and poets to respond to some of the films as well.
I got 1,000 questions in my mind right now. It's crazy.
I feel like I could keep talking, but I'm stopped just to breathe so you can ask me the questions.
This is when you know you have a lot to talk about. So I got to put the questions out before I forget. So the first question is, last year when you did the war movies, these are war movies from inside of Vietnam, right? So there's a perspective that could be challenging to the people who left Vietnam, the diaspora. So that's the first question. Do you have any pushback or challenges in your community about that? The second question I have is, when you go out and you get like a batch of 150 of these Doi Mai films, can you, like, do you have to go to 150 different production companies? Who is giving you 150 keys to this thing? And I ask that because with 150 films, isn't there any way where you go, I'll take all of them and I'll stream them for like a week or 2 weeks through my portal here in Britain so the rest of the world can see what you're seeing so you could share it with us? Is that a possibility? Those two questions are right.
I love your two questions. I have so much. You're gonna come up with like 10 million more questions. So the first question was about the I guess, the clapback from the curation of the war films. Yes, so it was a complex season because it was an introduction to Vietnamese cinema. And, you know, how on earth do you introduce a nation's sort of work in just 3 to 4 features and the shorts? So the complications run, and anyone Vietnamese would know this, is like the complexities between the North and the South. And I think, you know, a lot of my research was steered to the Northern side. One, coming from the, like, my heritage is Northern, and the archive also sits in Hanoi. So everything I was exposed to was very Northern. Thus, the curation was a lot of Northern films. So when we brought them back, there was a lot of, you know, people, especially the elders in the community, did not want to come because they felt like it wasn't their stories and it was too steered towards the Northern side. And then we had the second generation, third generation seeing that, but also enjoying it because they'd never seen anything quite like it. So it was complex, but we did take that on board and push that into the next season, where we were considering watching as many films from all sides of Vietnam. It's not just North and South, but it's the countryside, the Midlands, all of it. So that was hard to experience. But I think with a country like Vietnam, you're always going to have to, I guess, be prepared for anyone to say something negative or you haven't considered this, which is totally understandable. But like I said, solve problems and try to work your way through it.
There was no protest. There was no picketing or anything like that.
Oh,
like
gosh,
no violence.
God.
You do that in our community, Little Saigon in Orange County, you're going to have death threats. You can't just bring Northern propaganda, Northern war films into the community, which is beautiful that you could do it, you know, because, hey, it's, you don't get the push or the clapback is not as intense. And I think that's, you know, being able to see the other side's perspective is so important for us. Like, why not, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's crazy to hear, but I think I kind of understand it. And I think I still don't know that much about the sort of American sort of Vietnamese community. And in LA, I know just a little bit, but I feel, yeah, maybe we're really lucky we haven't got to that stage where those opinions would accelerate into something a little bit more severe. But, you know, some of the conversations weren't pretty, but then there were some that were just like, it was a learning curve. And I think in this day and age, we are all just learning from each other. No one can know every single thing. And to represent something, it's difficult because you're not saying this is all the stories and that's it. And it's one story. It's just a taste of it. So it was a big learning curve for me, for sure.
And I think, you know, something good comes out of dispersing the community that did it. I mean, it's like, okay, so you can't get strength in numbers that go and protest. You know, because you have a certain assimilation if you're everybody spread out. And so nobody's like violently together the way Miami is or the way Orange County is here in the communities, that when you have over hundreds of thousands of the same people in a strange country, you know, in America, and they're doing things that are like, okay, we have strength in numbers. So there's like some blessing and a curse, you know, at the same time. Mm-hmm.
God, I love this conversation with you. I feel like there's so many things. We could literally have a glass of wine and just keep going on different tangents. But I really want to continue this part of the conversation another time.
Yeah. So let's go back to the 150 that you watched. How can we all access that? Because that sounds so interesting to me. I never even heard of it. I didn't even know that that's a genre.
I didn't know until, I did know because I wrote it in my thesis, but I didn't know until went to Vietnam and spoke about it. So the magical thing is that I absolutely understand my position and privilege that I've had to be exposed to, you know, people in the film world in Vietnam, visiting the institute that not many people have gone to, and being connected in the way, basically living a life of blagging in the Vietnamese sort of film world. So I mean, it wasn't an easy feat. It sounds like I did a lot, and I did, but that's only because I persevered and asked all the right questions and pushed as much as I could. But, you know, every bit of information I've got has been so fractured. Like, I've had to work things out myself. I've had to push through conversations. You know, also my Vietnamese is terrible. I can understand it well, but I can't speak it. So there's that language boundary. So I thought, okay, if I were to jump back to 2019 when I was doing this and having all these issues, how could I make it better for myself? So what I've done is part of the funding is to build an ongoing digital archive of all my research. So I'm currently building a website that captures, obviously, the festival itself and the past programs, the films, the synopsis, because I don't know if you've done research on old Vietnamese films. The synopsis are so badly translated. You're like, what is this film about? Mm. So what I'm doing is building a comprehensive digital archive stroke website where it will place all my research along with, you know, interviews that I've had that I've recorded in Vietnamese, getting them translated. So they'll be, you know, it'll be accessible where I'll have it, a transcript in English, in Vietnamese, audio, all the films that I've seen. I'm building all the sort of like a Vietnamese IMDb on this archive, you know, who wrote it? When was it made? What's it about? I wrote a fun quote about it. And then I've done a paid review on like how I access the film, where I access the film, and can this person, whoever's reading it, watch it as well. And another thing to note is, I don't know if you know this, but because the lack of accessibility to Vietnamese films, someone somewhere has uploaded as many Vietnamese films onto YouTube. So it's kind of like there,
wait,
but they're really
they've
low.
They've uploaded it where?
YouTube.
Hmm. Maybe
many people, but there's this whole scene which I discovered in Vietnamese cinema that it lives on YouTube. However, it's very low res. The sound is choppy, but it's the only way people can access Vietnamese films. And I thought, okay, you can watch it, but you're not really getting that experience. So a lot of it exists and the rights is in the Vietnamese Film Institute, which is hard to get rights. But you can watch them online. And all the other films I've discovered, there are independent distributors, which you can contact directly, which I'll also put onto the archive so that you can find these gems that I've sat with.
Yeah, but who has time to reach out to each one of these production companies or distribution companies, right? That's your job, right? I wish all of it was centralized, like a Netflix of all these films. That would be amazing.
I mean, maybe one day, maybe I'll make like a Vietnamese movie in some ways or Netflix, yeah. Right? But it's going to be hard.
So you kick off the film festival tomorrow.
Yes.
Right. And how many people do you expect to come?
So we have multiple screenings. Our opening tomorrow, the capacity in the cinema is 180. We're almost sold out, which is amazing.
Yeah, it really is. God, it is such a good news to hear that, you know, and then people walk in, right? It's exhilarating to hear about this.
It's been nerve-wracking just watching the box office sales reports come to my email. And I was like, oh my gosh, we only sold 10 tickets. And the next day it's like 50. But our social media game has been hot this year. And I think because we are, the whole narrative is Doi Mui. And it's like, no one's even heard of it before. So like, what is this? And we already built rep from last year. It was small, but there's rep. And I think it kind of shows that there's a hunger for this, which is really, it feels good that people want this. It's not just my own personal journey, but everyone wants a bit of it.
You know, what I'm excited to hear about is these Vietnamese British people who are like around our age in their 40s and 50s, who predominantly probably feel ashamed about being Vietnamese all these years, all these decades. And then all of a sudden having an awakening and then having a place for the next few years to congregate and to consume Vietnamese films because it's so important to be a part of that community.
Absolutely. I think what you just said there is so beautiful. And I think that's kind of like rooted in why I do what I do, is that this is just so much more than just, yeah, I'm doing an arts project. It's to start conversations in a community that has never had that space to. And, you know, like, even though we are leading with films, like, to commission Vietnamese, British Vietnamese artists and illustrators to exhibit work in a public art space and get paid to do that. And then we're like showcasing a British Vietnamese DJ and producer who specializes in UK drill and grime, who's going to respond to the whole season for tomorrow as well. And he's still very much, you know, finding his identity journey. And he was like, projects like this really makes me feel like I'm doing something for myself. So it's just amazing. I feel very, very, I don't know, good about it.
I can't wait till this gets bigger and bigger and bigger and I can actually go to this one day because it sounds so fun. And I really can't wait to meet all the people who show up to these film festivals because they're really cool people. Who do you think of when you think of Vietnamese British creatives? Who are some names? I dare not say who do you like look up to or respect or, you know, worship, but who are the people that you really think about?
Oh, that's such a gorgeous question. I'm going to list out everyone I love and have respect for, and everyone who's listening to this should follow them because their work's just brilliant.
And then you're just going to send me the spreadsheet so I can invite them onto the podcast.
Yes, please. You need to, like, honestly, they are such humble beings and they're so talented. So, okay, so you've got an hour. So Nguyen Do, who wrote Summer Rolls, which was the first place. So she's actor, writer, all-round amazing human. Zoe Pham, who was born in Vietnam, but she lives in the UK. She is an illustrator. I'm going to have to give you her Instagram handle because she reimagined some of the posters.
Give it to me now.
If you you have to look at her work. So
Zoe Pham.
Zoe, but her Instagram handle is not Zoe. She's going to cry when I tell her this.
we have to shout out. We have to shout out Vietnamese creatives because this is what we do.
This is what we love. And we love it. So her Instagram handle is Flowers Graveyard.
Awesome.
So, her work is fantastic. There's her, an amazing illustrator who she actually came on board of the festival as a community ambassador for London. So what the budget in is that, you know, because we want to engage community, I've given her a designated job to go speak to community groups to bring them to the cinema because they still have to trust the process of coming into a space they've never been invited to. Anyway, and then I discovered that she's an illustrator. So I was like, okay, you've got to reimagine The Bitter Taste of Love and the Shorts program. So she's done that. Tan Tran, who's also an illustrator. He's also Vietnamese born, but brought up in the UK. His work is brilliant. He reimagined Children of the Mist. Nancy Nat Vu. So she's a community ambassador, all round great person, delved into marketing. She's probably one of the most brilliant people that I've met today. She's so much fun, so much joy, so inclusive. Nami Wams, who is the Vietnamese grimes and UK drill DJ who's performing tomorrow. Jambo, who's British, Vietnamese, Chinese, who is a rapper. And we're premiering his music video tomorrow before the screening.
Jambo.
Jambo. Yeah, Jambo is a dude, I'm telling you. I'm going to say this publicly. I'm totally in love with him. I think he's brilliant, talented. His voice is just to die for. You've got to listen to him. Natalie Lynn Balderston, who's an award-winning poet. So she's mixed Vietnamese and Scouse, which is the northern side of Britain. But gosh, I'm getting excited. Daniel Fung, who's a dancer and actor, also very close to my heart. Who else? Oh my gosh. Now I feel the pressure. There's just, yeah.
I can go on. Yeah, keep going. There's a woman, I forget her name. She does set production for stages. I forget her name.
Is it Moi Tran?
Yeah, yes, Moi Tran. That's right.
Of course. How can I forget Moi Tran? She is so brilliant as well. And Loy, Loy, who did the graphic design and branding for Stanya Ease, he's currently in Taiwan, but lives in Saigon, but he's British born Vietnamese. Gorgeous human. If you ever need a graphic designer or branding person, he's the one.
How did you come up with the name Starnya Ease?
It was actually a fun Okay, so it's a fun conversation between myself, Kung Pham, who's the other curator from season one, and Loy, who is the graphic designer. So we were just kind of like brainstorming names. And it was actually Loy who put together Vietnamese words that meant something. And he put the herb Starnese. And I was like, oh, I like that. That sounds really good. And Kung, who's like an archivist and, you know, speaks really good Vietnamese, were like, oh, this is code switching that, you know, we do, like British, English, Vietnamese. And we started to talk about a title that needs to resonate with Vietnamese people and British people. So we kind of played around with the words and we thought about star, which is kind of like, you know, you think about light on screen, performance projection, but also a guiding light for people who've left Vietnam. Nha means home in Vietnamese. So that kind of resembled the start of Anise. We're like, oh, we can put, you know, the word home. So people moving out of Vietnam, trying to find a place to settle, finding a home. And then ease is that kind of end bit of Anise. And we thought, oh, that's kind of, that could be the emotional state, you know, where people have settled, people are reflecting, people are finding a place where they can be at home. So that's kind of how the title came.
That's a beautiful explanation of the title.
I felt like I botched that up. I was like, ah.
No, you got it perfectly. You nailed it. And I thought about that when I first saw the program, Star Anise. It sounded exactly like Star Anise, the herb that we use in pho.
Exactly. And I think, you know, one of the things that we wanted is to build something that's really familiar. And yes, you know, when you think of Vietnam, you think of food, you think of pho. But we're not going to deny that. Like, you know, it's such a beautiful dish. We all love it. And the Star Anise is pivotal in Vietnamese sort of culture and cuisine.
Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today. Is there any parting thoughts that you have?
Just a massive thank you for taking the space to talk to me to hear about what this festival's about. And I guess for everyone who's listening, just support us, just follow us, come to it if you can, and hopefully I'll bring it abroad. I'll bring it to LA so more people can experience it. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I look forward to meeting you one day because this is amazing what you're doing.
Thank you. And you're amazing in having these conversations. So thank you for being you.
Thank you, Tuyet. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes, thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.